Shanaka Huvacha. Sri Shanaka said, Saha hi vai. Of course, Nivritti, on the path of self-realization. Nidataha, always engaged. Sarvatra, in every respect. Upekshakaha, indifferent. Munihi, sage. Kasha, for what reason? Va, or. Vrahatim, vast. Etam, this. Atvaramahat, one who is pleased in himself. Samabhyasat, undergo the studies. So translation, Sri Shanaka asked Suta Goswami, Sri Shukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. Why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? So you can repeat, Sri Shanaka asked Suta Goswami,
Sri
Shukadeva
Goswami
was already on the path of self-realization. And thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. For the people in general, the highest perfection of life is to cease from material activities and be fixed on the path of self-realization. Those who take pleasure in sense enjoyment, or those who are fixed in material bodily welfare work, are called karmis. Out of thousands and millions of such karmis, one may become an Atmarama by self-realization. Atma means self, and Rama means to take pleasure. Everyone is searching after the highest pleasure, but the standard of pleasure of one may be different from the standard of another. Therefore, the standard of pleasure enjoyed by the karmis is different from that of the Atmaramas. The Atmaramas are completely indifferent to material enjoyment in every respect. Srila Shukadeva Goswami had already attained that stage, and still he was attracted to undergo the trouble of studying the great Bhagavatam literature. This means that Srimad Bhagavatam is a postgraduate study even for the Atmaramas, who have surpassed all the studies of Vedic knowledge. So, Shanaka uvacha savai nivritti nirata savitro pekshiko munihi kasya va brahmatim meitam atmarama sama vyasat omagana timirandasha gananjana shlakaya chakshurun meditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So, the story of Shukadeva Goswami is quite interesting. He was acting originally as the son of Srila Vyasadeva, as a Brahmavadi. There's a difference between a Mayavadi and a Brahmavadi, just to be specific. A Brahmavadi basically thinks that everything is Brahman and Atmarama. In other words, he's taking pleasure understanding that he's Brahman, aham brahmasmi, like we find described in the Gita. That Brahmabhuta prasanatma, asochitina kankshuti, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, madbhaktim labhate param. That Brahmabhuta, one who's established understanding his Brahman, prasanatma, he's taking pleasure in the self, same thing as Atmarama. Asochitina kankshuti. So the things that cause us distress in this world, there's two basic things, in addition to the threefold miseries. There's hankering and lamentation. Hankering means you need something. Lamentation means you lost it. You know, just like sometimes we look in the mirror and see how old we are and we lament. What happened to our youth? It was fleeting. So you young people think that youth will continue forever. Isn't that what he's thinking? You know, I can have these questions forever, be a new bhakta forever, you know. but one day, dude, Alex will be an old booger, you know, an old man. That's a fact. So, sochati kongshati. And then samak sarveshu bhuteshu, one who understands the living entity, somehow he's the equal poise, actually, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, he's equal poise towards all living entities. In other words, he doesn't discriminate between different races or different even species. Like we were talking yesterday about vegetarian diet. You know, one in the mode of passion, according to Krishna in the Gita, sees different entities in different bodies as different. And he has animosity towards some, in other words, he hates some, and some he eats, and some he makes friends with, according to how it pleases his senses. Just like I just seen in the news, there was someone posted a picture on Facebook of some burning the Quran. So so many Muslims in Bangladesh destroyed a Buddhist shrine. You know, just like it was different. You know, just seeing different people according to different religions and different races. I mean, it's actually a mode of passion understanding, and it turns to ignorance. Of course, destruction turns to ignorance. So, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, sees all living entities equally. As also said in the Shopanishad, yastu sarvani bhutani anmana ivana pashati. That's the way he sees pashati, to see. And then, mad bhaktim labhate param. And Prabhupada translates that, then he's ready to take up devotional service. So, he may not yet be a devotee if he's on the Brahma Bhuta platform, but he may not even know about devotional service. But then he's innocent. It's not a Mayavadi. A Mayavadi is saying that Krishna's form and personality are temporary. Avajananti mamuda, as Krishna says in the Gita. That those who say, my form and personality is temporary, they're mudhas, they're asses. Krishna is very explicit and direct about these things. And so that's a Mayavadi. But a Brahmavadi is sort of like an innocent guy. Or girl, that they just don't know any better. They haven't come in. A typical example is the four Kumaras. The four Kumaras were Brahmavadis, and what happened is that they didn't know any better. But until they came in, when they came in contact with Lord Vishnu, they smelled the tulsi leaves off at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu and saw Lord Vishnu when they went to the spiritual realm. Then at that point, they became devotees. So that's a Brahmavadi, they're innocent people. So Shukadeva Goswami appeared to be a Brahmavadi. However, that was a pastime. Because originally, Shukadeva Goswami, he was the parrot of Srimati Radharani. This is a whole story. Srimati Radharani has all these interesting pets, and, you know, even pet elephants and pet deer. And pet parrot, and Krishna also has some interesting pets too. A pet peacock, and I think the peacock's name is Tandoori or something like that, mentioned in some of the literature. So here's the story. Once upon a time, this story was told by Godbrother Gaura Govinda Maharaj. He said, you know, once upon a time, Lord Shiva was speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam to his wife Durga. And as he was speaking to Durga, it's a very, very interesting story. As he was speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam to Durga, Durga was doing what many people do during Bhagavatam class. Sleeping. Yeah. She was sleeping. But he was just concentrated on Bhagavatam. So, but he was hearing her voice say, oh, very nice, very nice. But it was actually the parrot of Radharani who was listening, Ashuka. And so, you know, the parrots can emulate different sounds. Sometimes they even emulate the sound of a mobile phone ringing. Has anyone seen that? And you think, oh, well, the phone's ringing, it's just your parrot. Or they emulate the sound of your wife or whatever. And it's really funny when they do that. Of course, here you don't have pets, right? No. Some people have pets. Pet parrots? Sometimes. And sometimes they say, Polly want a cracker or something like that. And then the parrot repeats. So Shuga is a parrot. So that's what parrot means. Also, he's called Shugadev Goswami because he makes the ripened fruit of the Vedic literature sweeter. So he was listening, and Lord Shiva was reciting Bhagavatam, and Parvati was... You may ask why people sleep during Bhagavatam class. And one answer given is that if one is having sleep problems, it's called apnea, then it's caused by inauspicious things in the heart. So when one hears Bhagavatam, all the inauspicious things in the heart go away, so one is able to sleep properly. It's a joke, of course. I mean, obviously. But basically, it's because one doesn't have a taste for hearing and chanting when one sleeps. I mean, Maharaj Parikshit stayed awake for 7 days without sleeping. There's no record of Shukadeva Goswami yelling at him for falling asleep. Wake up, Maharaj! Wake up! Oh, okay. You're going to die. Oh, yeah, you're right. There's no record of that in the Vedic literatures. So Shukadeva Goswami, or Shuka, the parrot, wasn't Shukadeva Goswami then, was actually responding to Lord Shiva as Lord Shiva was reading Bhagavatam. But then Lord Shiva looked up, and then he saw that it was a parrot rather than his wife, and he got really angry at the parrot. And he started chasing the parrot. A stupid parrot, he's emulating my wife's voice. And he's chasing the parrot. And at the same time, Srila Vyasadeva, this is a story, of course, that Srila Vyasadeva was reciting the Bhagavatam to his wife. And what happened is that his wife was actually awake, and she had her mouth open. So the story is, this is like an esoteric story. The parrot flew into her mouth to escape from Lord Shiva's anger. And so then he appeared in a womb, somehow it went from the mouth. Don't ask me how it happened. Because I know human biology, there's no real connection between the digestive system and the reproductive organs. I know that. I know enough about biology. Because when we were young, we had this visible man we used to take apart. You ever see that? And so anyway, so this is Siddhantic more than to be taken literally. You understand? Siddhantic means the proper Siddhanta. But it may not be a literal story. But this is a story that Gaura Govinda Maharaj told, which is a very interesting story. So then Srila Vyasadeva's wife was pregnant. And at that point, Shukadeva began to exhibit the qualities of a Brahmavati. That means one who doesn't know about Krishna, but knows he's Brahman. So what happened is that... he refused to come out of the womb for like 16 years. And even Krishna came and tried to convince him to come out. Krishna was concerned with the lady was so big, after that period of time. 16-year-old boy. So then, eventually, he heard the Bhagavatam again. And then he understood there's a purpose in life. Because without understanding the purpose in life, Bhagavatam, Krishna Katha, then what is the reason for living? Because if you come out of the womb, naturally you'll get coddled a lot, isn't it? The parents will pick you up and kiss you and pinch your cheek and say how cute you are and take your shoes and bronze your shoes. And then you have all these birthday parties when you're young too, right? It's like I sent a message today that one of my disciples' children, it was his birthday. I sent a message, dear Ishwara Puri was his name. Happy birthday. I hope you get plenty of presents. So children naturally get, in good situations, they get spoiled. So he was thinking, if I come out, I'll get spoiled. And that's Maya, because I'll become attracted to the material world. Now I'm fine here, packed up in the womb. It's a very nice situation. There's nice worms biting me. Whenever my mother eats peppers, hot peppers, spices, chilies, then no pain. That's good for me. Queen Kunti had the same attitude. Tatsutatsu Jagat Guru. She said, let these difficulties happen again and again, because they'll keep me Krishna conscious. Because of the material world, Prabhupada said, an easy life and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. So if everything's comfortable, like your Hiranyakashipu, you have plenty of gold and a soft bed, then you're not going to want to get out of the material world. Right? I mean, so a certain amount of austerity, tapasa brahmacharyena, samenacha dhamenacha, especially the brahmacharis are taught austerity, if there's any brahmacharis. So anyway, because they go to the ashram of the spiritual master, what is it? Brahmachari guru kule vasandanta guru hitam. The brahmachari should go to the ashram of the spiritual master. Gorohitam has learned how to work for the benefit of the spiritual master, instead of his own benefit. Archian dasavan nicho. He has to learn that he's a dasavan, not a bhagavan. You understand? Bhagavan means someone who's full of opulences, and dasavan means someone who's full of service. So he has to be ready to do anything, clean the temple, like you were talking yesterday about having the Gundicha Marjana at the temple. Not hiring a bunch of people to clean. A Gundicha Marjana, all right, let's collect money and pay for people to clean the temple. Because the devotee should clean the temple, cleaning the heart. So Dasavan, he learns good behavior, and he learns the guru is actually his friend. Because the guru does tough love. His parents do soft love. You understand the difference? The parents were just like, oh, my cute little boy, you know, he may be smoking marijuana. It's my little baby. Isn't it? Of course, sometimes they get tough. But generally, it's just, you know, parents don't. I say that to the devotees, you know, they join the movement. They say, my mother's upset I'm joining the movement. She said, don't worry. She will never reject you. Because a mother can never reject a son, isn't it? Or a daughter. It's just like, it's so, I mean, a good mother. I mean, nowadays in Kali Yuga, you got, you know, this abortion thing, you got all so many things going on, so you have so many crazy people. And actually, it's a fact that when a lady has an abortion, her whole life, it's like traumatized. The rest of her life, she's actually thinking of the child she lost. Or when they have a miscarriage, isn't it? The lady is just, and it's very traumatic. It's very traumatic. So, we're getting back to the story. So, Sugadev Goswami, he didn't want to come out. Because he was just thinking, you know, there's too much Maya out here. And then my parents are going to ask me to get married. You know, and like Viswarup was thinking yesterday, right? We told the story. Viswarup, he was so detached, and he heard his parents talking about his planning this marriage, he just said, I'm out of here. The same night, he was gone. And so, anyway, so Shukadeva Goswami was like that. So when he heard the Bhagavatam, then he came out. But when he came out, he didn't want to hang around his parents either. Wasn't such a good son. He just ran away. Can you imagine that, you know, waiting so many years for a child to be born, and then he runs away? Isn't that kind of frustrating? You know, 16 years, when are you coming out? And then, goodbye, Dad. Goodbye, Mom. I don't want anything to do with you. So it's described that Srila Vyasa was running after his son. He was saying, oh, my son, my son. Of course, he is a pure devotee. We understand that there is no material attachment that he had. But still, it's a natural affection the father has for the son. My son, my son. It's described that only the mountains and the trees echoed his plaintive cry. In other words, there was an echo. But Sugadeva Goswami didn't say anything. He just was running away. And he didn't even take time to put clothes on. He was naked. And because he was a pure devotee, there was no problem. And he even described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that he ran by, he and his father following behind him, ran by some girls that were bathing. And they were bathing naked in the river too. And when he passed by them, they didn't even bother to cover themselves up because they saw that he was a transcendental personality. He had no desire, no material desires. But when his father walked by, they just like that, covered themselves up. And then finally, he was able to escape his father, but he had a very interesting trick to escape his father. What he did was he used his mystic power to create a duplicate Shukadeva Goswami. Yeah. Because his body was so attached, and he just keep running after him. So he just like went home and you know, I don't know how he did it. If I knew, I wouldn't tell you anyway, because it'd be duplicates of a lot of people. Yeah. Duplicate Aya Namaha, you know, so whatever. And then another Shukadeva Goswami looking exactly like him was created. And that Shukadeva Goswami, or what is Goswami? That was Shukadeva Das Adhikari. He went home with Śrīla Vyāsadeva. And there's even a description in the Bhagavatam about the descendants of that Shukadeva. If you read the Bhagavatam, it's interesting. And Prabhupada makes it very clear in his purport that it's not Shukadeva Goswami, it's another Shuka. A Shukadeva that was created like a clone. Like nowadays, right? They're talking about clones, they clone dogs, they clone human beings. Not yet. And they say that, what they say is they want to clone you so you can keep spare parts in your refrigerator. That's the whole proposal, isn't it? Because sometimes you need a heart transplant, so you don't want the body to reject it. So therefore you have to have someone identical with yourself. Imagine like if you have, you're stocking some kidneys in the refrigerator. Kidneys, heart, brain, soul. No, not soul. But then the clone may decide that he wants to take parts from you. Then you'll be in trouble. Then you open up the refrigerator and he puts you in the refrigerator. So, anyway, so Shukadeva Goswami, he was able to clone himself. And therefore he left very happily. And because he was naked and like an avaduta, avaduta means like the wind, therefore, people thought, this guy is crazy. I mean, obviously, if you see someone going down the street without clothes, I mean, you definitely think he's crazy. And at least in America, it's called streaking. You hear that same word here? No?
Yes,
same word, yeah. I mean, the person would get arrested, wouldn't they? So people were making fun of him and throwing things. Children were running after him saying, look at this crazy guy. But then, when he arrived at the assembly, Maharaj Pariksit had arranged, because Maharaj Pariksit was going to leave this world in 7 days by the body of the snake bird, all the sages stood up and recognized who he was. Mm. And he actually had similar features to that of Krishna. That's called Sarupya Siddhi. There's different types of liberation. You know, he had blue skin. And so he looked a lot like Krishna. Very beautiful, like perfect. The sages could understand even before he spoke. Generally, you understand someone when they speak. But he certainly by the qualities of the body, they understand certain proportions. Just like, even nowadays, they have this thing called face reading, where you can read where the ears are and where the eyes are. You can actually understand someone's personality to a certain extent. Just like this one devotee of Jesus, his ears are this big. Not quite. I mean, they're really big. I was thinking if they were wings, he could fly. That's Rishikesh. So that means he can sit in here. That's his main thing, he just sit in here. So you can actually look at someone's face. You know, there's a thing, it's a science, where you can examine someone's body and face and just see. Astrologers do that too. They can look at some, apart from reading the stars, they can look at the face and understand whether someone will be a leader or something like that.
Hitler, yeah.
When
he was in the Aryan caste, he studied the proportion of
faces. Yeah, that's true. So you can understand how to use people, manipulate people like that. So. So anyway, these sages understood, because Shukadeva Goswami's arms reached to his knees, his eyes were like lotus petals, and all the proportions in the face were just like perfect. And this is a really beautiful personality. And so they stood up to receive him. And of course, the main way you can understand whether someone is a great personality, it's not so much how they look, although in that case, you know, it was pretty apparent. It's how they speak or what they say. That's how you can tell the difference between a fool and an educated person, when he opens his mouth. Like Prabhupada gave that example of the jackal. Once upon a time, this is a famous story from the Hitto Pradesh. So once upon a time, there was a jackal in the forest. You know what a jackal is?
Yeah.
It's like a wild dog. You know, you hear them in Mayapur. If you go to Mayapur, you hear the jackals crying all the time. And so the jackal, somehow or other, some paint spilled on him, you know. Prabhupada said, like, blue or purple paint. And he looked like, wow, effulgent. And then the other animals, when they saw him, and even the king of the forest, like I said, it's a Hitopadesha. It's not a real story, but it's a story to illustrate it. Prabhupada told him. All the animals offer their obeisances to him. And they said, oh, you must be the king. Just like if you see someone, like, especially effulgent, or able to produce ashes from the air or something, you think you must be God. Isn't it? You know, if I came in with an effulgence, I arranged an electronic device, I'd work to arrange something, so there was like 10,000 watts coming from my head, you'd say, wow, he's self-realized. Even though it was just a trick. So this jackal also wasn't a trick, it was by accident. But anyway, they thought he had become a very special jackal. They didn't understand it was a jackal. And so they posted him on the throne of the king of the forest. And everyone was offering their obeisances, you know, dunderbutts. Even the lion was offering dunderbutts. Somehow that happened. And then what happened is it was the evening, became the evening. And then, you know, the evening the jackals start to cry. Whatever they do. And so naturally as a response to the other jackals, he did the same thing. And as soon as they heard him speak, he understood he was a jackal. And then the lion had his dinner at that point. You know, jackal prasad. So Prabhupada told that story to illustrate the point that you can tell the difference between a learned person and a fool by their speech, not by the way they look or anything like that. But unfortunately, people in Kali Yuga, they elect political leaders generally based upon the way they look or charisma, some mundane charisma like that, rather than listening to the quality of the speech, not just the tone of the speech, but what they're saying. So Sugriva Goswami, obviously, was speaking to Srimad Bhagavatam, and he spoke to Maharaj Pariksit, and in that same audience, you had Sutta Goswami hearing, and Sutta Goswami later spoke to the sages at Naimisharanya Forest. They were conducting a 1,000-year sacrifice, and those sages were headed up by Shanaka Rishi. So anyway, that's the story of Sugriva Goswami. Now, the second point was the point Prabhupada made in his purport about Atmarama, one who takes pleasure in the self. And the next verse in the Bhagavatam is a very important verse in the Bhagavatam, the next verse after the one we're reading today. It's called the Atmarama verse, in fact. Atmaramas cha, nigrantapi, etc. So, Muniyo, nigrantapi, rukume, kuvanti, bhakti, ahoitaki, tambhuta, gunahari. And this verse says that all varieties of Atmaramas, when these people take pleasure in the self, are attracted basically to the pastimes of Krishna. So this verse proves that bhakti yoga and Krishna consciousness is superior to mayavad or impersonal realization. So the example is given of Shukadev and of the four Kumaras, that even people who were established in Brahman were attracted to Krishna's pastimes. That proves Krishna's pastimes are transcendental. You know, people that, I'll just say it in a different way, people who have no material desires like Krishna's pastimes. That means that Krishna's pastimes are not material. You understand logically? Like if I have no material desires and I like Krishna's pastimes, that means that Krishna's pastimes are not material, are transcendental. So this Atmarama verse was discussed between Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya many years ago, about 500 years ago. And it was interesting that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave a few explanations about it, and Lord Chaitanya basically almost gave like thousands of explanations of this particular verse, because he took Atmarama, the word Atmarama, to mean many different things. He actually took each word to mean different things, but particularly the word Atmarama. Atmarama can mean someone who is self-realized, Brahman realized. It could mean a devotee. It could mean a crazy person or a materialist. You understand? Atma Rama, one who's taking pleasure in the self. Because Atma can also mean body in certain contexts. So one who takes pleasure in his body is an Atma Rama. Or one who's completely crazy, he's an Atma Rama too. And Nigranta means crazy also. Which is one of the verses in the Atma Rama, one of the words in the Atma Rama verse. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya was able to explain this Atma Rama verse in so many ways that basically Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became convinced to become a devotee. He defeated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had previously tried to teach him the Bhagavatam, not the Bhagavatam, Vedanta Sutra, sorry. Vedanta Sutra, for 7 days. And Lord Chaitanya, observing etiquette, made believe he was listening to it. But then after 7 days, Lord Chaitanya said, "I haven't understood a word you said." And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "You know, why don't you say something?" And Lord Chaitanya said, "Because I understand the Vedanta Sutra, but I don't understand anything of your explanations." And then he began to explain, and he overwhelmed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya point. So anyway, so this Atma Rama verse is very, very important to us because it shows that Krishna consciousness is transcendental to Brahman realization. So these are some of the points here. I don't want to go on too long because we have a big day today. So any questions or comments? Alex? There's that little smirk on his face. Yeah.
What? Did they sleep when they were talking for 7 days? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya?
I assume that they took rest, yeah. It wasn't like Parikshit Maharaj. Yeah, with 7 days, you know, they had Bhagavatam class like for a few hours every day. You know, Maharaj Parikshit didn't sleep. Shukadeva Goswami didn't sleep, but I'm sure the Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took a little rest. Particularly since Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a Brahmin, so at certain times of the day, Brahmins have to do their sanjha practices. You know the sanjha practice? Sanjha means like the times of the day, like the early morning when the sun is rising and evening when the sun is going down and also when the sun is overhead. These are called the tri sanjha, sanjha times, when there's a transition, sanjha, a transition from one time to the other. So the Brahmins have to do their duties at that time. And if they don't, they're considered fallen. Just like this morning, I was thinking, because of this rascal daylight savings time, you know, when should I say Gayatri? You know, because usually I would say Gayatri anyway about 5:30 or something like that. Then I looked out and it was still dark. I said, no, I can't say Gayatri now, so I had to wait until right before class to say Gayatri because these rascals changed the time. The only reason they changed the time is because during the summer they want to go out and get drunk a lot when it's light. Have a party, isn't it? Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, it just disturbs everybody. People get in car accidents, too, because of the change. Because they're driving to work and it's still dark, and they're groggy the first day or two after the daylight savings time changes. It's a foolish thing. Foolish thing. And it confuses everybody. It's better just to keep the same time. Isn't it? I need to check the clocks ahead. You leave an hour, and then you don't know what time Mangalarti is. Anyway, so I'm sure that they took a break. And his next question is, did they eat prasadam during that time? I'm sure they ate prasadam. Next question is, did they wash their clothes during that time? What's that? Yeah, they changed their clothes and washed them. Not while they were wearing them, they washed them. Any other interesting questions like that? did Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya talk to his wife during that time? That's another question. Yeah, I'm sure he did. Because she was cooking for him. What's that?
Regarding when you say Sudha Goswami, and Vyasadeva was after Sudha Goswami, and the girls were bathing.
Yeah.
So they put the clothes when Vyasadeva came in.
Yeah, yeah, because they saw him acting as a grahasta, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he was a pure devotee, but because he was acting ostensibly as someone who was, you know, in the grahasta order of life. Where Shukadeva Goswami was actually transcendental to all the four orders of life. I mean, that's an avaduta. An avaduta means someone who is not in any of the ashrams. You understand? None of the ashrams. He's not a brahmachari, a rahasa, vanaprasa, or sannyas. And he's not an outcast either. He's just like, avaduta means like the wind. He has no rules and regulations. And who can think of a famous person who was an avaduta? Lord Nityananda. He was called Nityananda Avadut. Because sometimes he would do things that were just like really amazing. Like, sometimes he would just like walk around too and like open, you know, without any clothes. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would say, "Put on your clothes, Lord Nityananda." He's just dancing in ecstasy. And Lord Chaitanya would take his own clothes and cover him. Or Lord Nityananda would go to Srivas Thakur's house, and even though he was a grown man, you know, tall, very tall, he would sit on Srivas Thakur's wife's lap and drink her breast milk, you know, when he was, you know, he was like 40 years old or something. And she would feed him like a little baby. "Now eat, Lord Nityananda." Because you would feed him. I mean, that's pretty unusual, isn't it?
You understand that Leela, it has to be really
transcendental. You have to have spiritual vision. So it's like an avadut. And then there was one. Yeah, of course, Jodh Bart, but there was one person in the recent age that was really. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur really liked him, and he used to smoke ganja sometimes. Isn't it? What is his name again? Some Babaji. Yeah, there's a whole story about it. So it's just like, I mean, these people, they're just like transcendental personalities, and you really can't understand what's happening with them. And they're not here to set an example. You know, they're here just to, they're in ecstasy. There's so much ecstasy, you know. You know, they may go to someone and just slap them or something like that. He would kick, yeah, he would kick. Sivananda Sain, Lord Nityananda, he didn't get his place to stay one day. And he cursed Sivananda Sain's sons to die. And then when Sivananda Sain came back, because Sivananda Sain was arranged for toll collecting and everything, for all the devotees of the way to Jagannath Puri, he kicked him. Yeah, well, yeah, when he was eating food at Dvaitacharya's house, Lord Nityananda said, "I had hoped to break my fast today, and then, you know, not even a morsel." And Dvaitacharya just said, "You know, just eat, you reject Paramahamsa," he called him. You know, rejected Paramahamsa. And then Lord Nityananda would throw rice all over the place, and one grain or a few grains would hit Dvaitacharya and stick to his body and start dancing. He said, "Now I'm contaminated because I've been hit by the rice eaten by this rejected Paramahamsa." So that's what we mean by avaduta. Someone who's so transcendental, and they act like, I mean, of course, Prabhupada is completely transcendental, but he acted within the Varnashram system. Generally, devotees do that. But once in a while, you'll find someone who's acting completely aloof from the Varnashram system, and it's hard to understand their activities. Like Shukadeva Goswami was like that.
Is this the time when these transcendental people, they have that moon circle around their head?
I don't know. What?
Some of the
pictures. Oh, they have like a effulgence, yeah. Effulgence.
It's just a picture that depicts that.
Yeah.
They just make something like
that. But they're effulgent. Naturally, they have an effulgence. I mean, there's many transcendental people. I mean, I haven't seen any in ISKCON like that. But
in Tibet, this bloke, Lobsang Rampa,
yeah,
he had that effulgence. And he wrote one of the books that he could see the electricity, high voltage electricity, out of the wiring system, and he would touch it.
Oh my God. Yeah, don't try that. Yeah, I mean, they can do so many things. But we don't have any in this kind. You know, we don't allow any in this time. They can serve in some other institution if they like. So any other questions? Yes, they eat for Shavan too. Any other interesting questions? For the ladies, any questions? feel like he's an avaduta. But she cooks nicely. No questions? Yes. Personally. Yeah, it's another soul, obviously. I mean, you have so many stories in the Vedic literatures of genetic engineering or cloning, things like that. Like the story, in the Ramayana, about Maharaj Nimi. His spiritual master, Vasishtha Muni, got very upset with him because he did a sacrifice without his knowledge or without his permission. And he got cursed to die by his guru. His guru said, may you become nirdeha, means without a body. And so the sages kept his body in some oil to preserve it. And they wanted to bring him back to life, and they got permission from the demigods to do that, but he didn't want to come back to life because he wanted to be with Krishna in the spiritual world. So because he didn't have any children, they had to clone his body to get some children. It's the scripture is like churning, but it's a cloning type of process. And so out of his body came Janaka the First. You know Janaka? But it's not the same Janaka who was the father of Sita Devi, because the father of Sita Devi was Janaka like the 20th. You know, so because everybody who was born in Mithila after that, all the kings were called Janaka. Just like you have in England, you know, Henry the First, Henry the Second, then Henry the Eighth. You know the story, Henry the Eighth? He had a lot of wives. And he killed a few. Yeah, because he wasn't divorced, so he had to make his own church, the Anglican Church, to get divorced. So so Janaka the First, Janaka the Second, and that's why Mithila is called Mithila. It's from the word maiti in Sanskrit, which means churn. Understand? So this process of being able to genetic, and also Prithu Maharaj came from genetic engineering or cloning. You had Vena. You know the story of Vena? Vena was killed by the sages by cursing. But then there was nobody to be king. And so they actually churned his body, genetically engineered it, and got the genes out. And actually they were able to not only clone, but they were able to take out the bad genes. And the bad genes appeared as Bahuka. You know who Bahuka is? It means sit down, basically, in Sanskrit. He was like a real ugly guy. You know, with all the bad qualities. Because Vena had bad qualities. They didn't want to just clone him. It would have been problematic. It would have been a new Vena. Vena the Second. So instead of cloning Vena, they somehow went into the chromosomes. I mean, who knows? With mantras and everything like that, they could do that. And then extracted the bad chromosomes. Here's a lot of questions for you now. Yeah. Extracted the bad chromosomes, and they got this Bahuka guy. And then the good chromosomes became Prithu and Prithu's wife. They even be able to provide a wife for someone with chromosomes. Pretty good, isn't it? Pretty good. No mother, no father. Because the father is the dead body. But anyway, so. Wow. So the scientists, they're far behind the times. In the Vedic system, they could do this very easily.
Even seminal injection and embryo transplant.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, they've already done that. That was done by the Brahmins, and they didn't have to take you to a hospital. They could do it with mantras.
Even Lord Balram's embryo was transferred.
Yeah, yeah, by Yogamaya. Yeah. Yogamaya. So these things were going on before. So does that answer your question?
Sure.
But we don't know how to do these things. Yeah.
They say in the Mahabharata time, the height of these people was about 18 feet or something.
Yeah, much higher.
Much higher.
Yeah.
But how come they...
Well, there's Kali Yuga, you know, just like... And somehow or other, Kali Yuga influences everything, so people come shorter, and people can't remember things as well. I mean, the influence of the environment, the vibration or something like that. causes that to occur.
Every youth, it changes, like, even time, we use the lifespan bigger and smaller.
Yeah, the whole material nature, the way it functions is different in each yuga. So it's just like, yeah, somehow or other we became shorter. And then everybody can play basketball very nicely. Yeah, they're, you know, when they act all, people like that. You know what basketball is? You have that here in this country, basketball? So any other questions about any of these points, about cloning or Shukadeva Goswami or Atmarama? So we're supposed to become absorbed or satisfied with the super self. And then nothing will bother us. Then we'll be samaksarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim. Then we'll be qualified to be devotees. If we're actually samak. It means, Krishna, that's the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Is it? Matrasparshu stakondhya. Sita oshna sukadukada. Ga maapayano nitash tamsta tiksha shabharata. One must learn to tolerate summer and winter seasons, heat and cold, happiness and distress. The tamsa tiksha shabharata, right? Samadarshan. Okay, another question.
So the word free of sex desire is used a lot, but there's different definitions of the word, is there? Like Shukadeva Goswami didn't see the naked woman and be fine, but a sannyasi is supposed to be free of sex desire, but
yeah.
Foot shouldn't touch a doll, wooden doll shaped like a girl.
Well, that's what Lord Chaitanya said. Lord Chaitanya gave the example that even if you saw the form of a wooden form of a lady, then there'd be changes in the body and mind. But, of course, Lord Chaitanya, obviously, he's not attracted to anything in this world. But he is giving the example of how cautious one should be in this world. So the question is, what does it mean to be free from sex desire? That's your question?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so what it means is that basically the one loves Krishna. And he loves Krishna so much, there's no room for loving someone else's body. He sees Krishna. It's like Rupa Goswami says, if you would all desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't go to see Krishna on the banks of the Keshi Ghat. Because if you go to see him, you won't be attracted to your wife anymore. Or your husband, as a matter of fact. Right? Like if the wife says to the husband, you're ugly. In comparison to Krishna. She does her duty, so anyway. So one is so attracted by Krishna that the happiness in this world is just insignificant. That's freedom from sex desire.
And then you still have to be careful of the material energy.
Well, until you come to the platform of prema, you understand? Then there's still the tendency, even though you may be free, but you're not absolutely free.
It's like I'm free of desire to play video games, and I don't have to worry about walking into a video game store because I just think it's lame.
But you're not absolutely free.
Well, if there's nothing else to do.
Because if you're in association, by that association you can become attracted again.
Right.
Just like, I'm not attracted to video games, but one time someone invited, this was many years ago, someone invited me into, it was one, actually someone I was preaching to, he owned a video game emporium. So this is when the main video game was Pac-Man. I don't know if you know what that means. No, none of you heard of Pac-Man?
Yeah.
Pac-Man, yeah. So he invited me in, and I looked at it, oh, even though I had no attraction to it, I saw it and I began to play with it. Oh! You know the Pac-Man? What? Eating fruit. So so the point is there, one may be free, but not absolutely free. Absolutely free means there's no possibility of it coming again. Free means you have no desire, but it's possible in the wrong association. Like Bharat Maharaj, he was absolutely free of material desire. Not absolutely. He was free of material desires, but not absolutely. So he wasn't attentive, it came back. That's a difference.
Physically, we can be free, but but mentally, if it's still there.
Yeah, mentally, well, mentally or physically, whatever.
It can pick up again.
Yeah. And even one may apparently be externally free. I mean, just like a child, for example. It appears like a child's innocent, free of sex desire, right? I mean, like a one-year-old baby, whatever. You know, you put him with a man or a woman, he doesn't even know the difference. Like Prabhupada said, his son or daughter asked him, he said, "Dad, when you were young, were you a boy or a girl?" So, you know, a little kid doesn't know the difference, but it's there in seed form. It's just like a little seed. You don't know what it is, at least I don't, because I'm not expert in seeds, until you put it in the ground and fructifies. But it's still there. Like the chickpeas, Prabhupada said the chickpeas, or the garbanzo beans, were found in the pyramids, and they were thousands of years old. But as soon as they were put in the ground, the seed came out. So it appeared there was nothing. But then when you put it in the proper soil, so one has to be very careful. Because if you put anybody who is not an absolutely pure devotee in the proper soil, different things will sprout. Yeah, you can become an alcoholic. I mean, not even talking about sex desire, you can become an alcoholic. I mean, people think, "Oh, I'm not an alcoholic, I never like liquor." But if you hang out with people who are alcoholics, and your friends, and your friends are all sitting there, I mean, in the beginning, you'll just take 7-Up. You're 7-Up. After that, it'll become Coca-Cola. Which is, Coca-Cola is very nice for cleaning engines, isn't it? Fork it. The police use it for cleaning blood off of a crime scene. Yeah, cleaning copper. It's great for cleaning DD articles. You know, the Pujari should always get some Coca-Cola for doing DD articles. It is. The syrup. And it's great for getting rid of your teeth. if you put a tooth in Coca-Cola, then after about 2 days, it's gone. So then you start drinking Coca-Cola. And then after that, you know, you're with your friends, you know, they're all sitting there, you know, you want to be part of the gang. Then after that, wine. And then you start with wine. It's not that much alcohol. Or you start with what's called near beer. Non-alcoholic beer. You've heard about that before? And so non-alcoholic, but your friends are saying, "Come on! Come on, Alex! Don't be prude, you know, just get with it." And then after that, you take a little wine, which is, you know, wine's good. Like Prabhupada said, you know, wine's good for digestion. Prabhupada said a little wine, a little alcohol is good for digestion. In the beginning of the movie, the devotees were carrying these hip flasks with them. Yeah, Prabhupada stopped it. Because one comment Prabhupada gave, that a little alcohol is good for digestion, the devotees went all over. You know, you give them an inch, they take a mile, you know. So they're just like... Just like when Prabhupada drank 7-Up once, then they had deliveries, trucks delivering to the temple. You know, Prabhupada did it. Prabhupada said. So, and then it becomes wine, and then after that a little beer. And then after that, what happens after that? A martini. And then after that, vodka. The next thing you know, you're drunk. Or medicinal, yeah. We actually, what was that story? Oh, yeah. There was one devotee who was distilling alcohol in his... He was a herbologist. So he wasn't drinking alcohol, but he was making tinctures, you know, for medicine. And so some of the kids broke into his laboratory and got drunk and smashed all the cars. Anyway, this happened in one of our farm communities in America. So... Anyway, so if we're put in the wrong association, anything can happen. So we have to be very, very careful. Like a razor's edge. You know, so you don't want to really be going into bars and preaching to people that much. You know, it's just like when I used to go into the college dormitories to preach, you know, distribute books, the air was so thick with marijuana smoke, you couldn't breathe. You know, I felt intoxicated. I went in there. And I said, "Oh, here we have some nice books." You know, anyway, And they would offer it to me. They say, oh, here's a little, they didn't say Mahaprasadam like the sages. Here's a little nectar. And they pass it around the room. You know how they do it in Maryland? They go and go. Well, actually, they hold it in. They don't breathe out. They go. Yeah, they have that good lung capacity. And then, you know, and of course, I had no tendency to take it, but still one has to be, to think that we're vulnerable. Anything can happen. So you have to be very, very careful who you associate with. Yeah, so, whether it's sex desire or drinking or anything that's not productive for Krishna consciousness. Yeah, very, very careful. I mean, anything can happen to any one of us if we're not careful, unless you're an absolutely pure devotee. If you're absolutely pure, then you can do anything. You can be, you know, anywhere. There's no problem. But I don't think any of us have that.
Because you have an association, then at times, like, since you're working, and then at times there is, like, office party, something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I'm the only one there...
At the office party?
Yeah. I mean,
you're the only one at the office party? It's a pretty lonely office party.
I know
what you mean. I was just...
So, how to deal with that?
Yeah. Well, the office parties aren't every day.
Yeah.
And you really have to go because you're working in the office. You know, they're going to look at you like you're from Mars if you don't go. And you'll never get a promotion in work. So, basically... You just have to show people that you're following certain strictures. They'll respect you for that. You know, people respect you for sticking to your principles. I mean, I gave the example the other day that I went to this big seminar, you know, 11-day seminar intensive for learning about how to be empathic. And, of course, I mentioned they weren't empathic towards chickens. They were eating chickens. So I had to sit down at the same dinner table as them, you know, with my raw food and everything like that. But they admired it. You know, they saw that I was sticking to my principles. I mean, first they joked, you know, you're a squirrel or something like that. You know, like squirrels, they just go around, or foraging. That's what sometimes people say, you know, like foraging, you know what foraging is? Like a cow forages the grass. So they say, oh, you're like a cow, or you're foraging, or you're like a squirrel. And, you know, first there's a little good-humored teasing, but after a while, they respect. You stick. How many people stick to their principles nowadays? Very few people do. And there's a lot of respect people have, and I've seen that. And I was there, and people respected me, that I was sticking to my principles, just eating raw food while they were gluttonous, you know, eating whatever garbage they were eating. Dog food. And after a while, I was sharing it with people. They said, oh, that looks good. Also, I brought with me like a whole giant box of these bars that devotees make, the Rama bars. I don't know if you have that here in New Zealand, but there's different devotee factories that make these energy bars. There's 3 or 4 factories in the United States, so like they just, you know, because I know the devotees, they give me these boxes for free. It's nice, isn't it, having connections? And so then when I go places, I give out the bars because it already, you know, people are not reluctant to take it. Like if I just give them a plate of halva, they don't know, what's this? But if it's a bar, you know, the bars and they have the ingredients on it. And they were taking it and they were enjoying it. And they became influenced to a certain extent with, you know, what I was doing. And they respected me. So you have to be like that. Stick to your principles. You know, don't drink the liquor at the party.
Is any of them on the suit compassion towards?
What's that?
Is any of them on the suit compassion towards them?
Some of them were vegetarians. Yeah. But they didn't understand. The ones that weren't didn't understand.
No one changed.
No one changed because of my comment. No. They just got angry with me. Because it was inappropriate. I mean, in one sense, it was inappropriate for me to just say, you know, where's your compassion towards the chicken? You're learning empathy here, but where's your empathy towards this poor chicken? I mean, in one sense, it was actually not the right thing for me to say, but I couldn't help myself. How many people are watching, Dwarka?